Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm here with Matthew Adelstein. Matthew, why don't you just introduce yourself to the audience?
So I run the popular blog Bentham's Newsletter, read by many of the world's greatest minds, including Richard, Scott Alexander, various smart people, and millions, more like 1,400 others. I'm in university. I'm studying philosophy. I write about various interesting topics like factory farming and why it's bad as opposed to good. I write about various culture war issues. For a while I wrote a lot of boring kind of niche philosophy articles, but I've been writing fewer of those recently because I'm trying to get more people to read the blog and ideally pay me money. That's who I am.
Yeah, that's good you're starting young. I mean, because building an audience is cumulative. So, the audience may not be huge now, but it's a lot of smart people who are reading it, a lot of important people. And, you'll build it over time. It's just you're very young and you're off to a good start. So you're a philosophy student at the University of Michigan. What year are you, a senior or junior, what?
I just finished my sophomore year.
Oh, okay. So you're really, really early. Are there people in your philosophy department who read your Substack and enjoy it?
Yeah. There's one guy who does. He read your Substack, though I won't name him. See, he likes to keep it secret that he's reads interesting things. But yes.
Yeah. So how intellectually curious are philosophy majors at a place like Michigan? It's not the top, Harvard or something, but it's a smart school. Philosophy tends to be a smart major, tends to draw intellectually curious people.
Yeah.
Are they interested in ideas?
Yeah, certainly more intellectually curious than is typical of undergraduates, but I think not that intellectually curious. Like, the number of people who are really interested in philosophy, who are sort of interested in ideas, who, read a lot of things like this, that I know from the philosophy department, I could count them on one hand.
That's interesting to know. Do you think, do you have a sense it would be higher at the percentage would be higher at, say, a more, more well-regarded school? Not that Michigan isn't a good school, but I'm saying someplace with a higher SAT score.
Yeah, I think so. So I have a good friend who goes to Oxford, and actually I'm going to be studying abroad next year at Oxford. And one of the reasons why I decided to was the way he's described Oxford. It sounds like the people there are much more intelligent, interesting, and intellectually curious.
Mm-hmm. What is the how do they do selection for Oxford? Is it it's all standardized tests? They have, how much subjective admissions do they have? How does it work exactly?
I don't know exactly how the normal admissions works for Oxford. The way it works for the study abroad program is you basically write an essay and apply, and most people who apply to study abroad get in. So studying abroad is not that difficult. But I think, getting into Oxford is obviously very difficult. And I think there is standardized testing of some sort, but I'm not an expert on UK admissions.
Yeah. I wonder whether it's a admissions thing, selection thing, or whether it's a European versus American thing, whether your American students are just less intellectually curious. I don't know if that's true. It might be true, but I would guess probably, but I'm not sure whether that's actually the case.
Yeah.
So you're Bentham's Bulldog is the name of the Substack, and this is because you are a utilitarian. Is utilitarianism the totality of your worldview, or are you like most people who adopt utilitarianism in combination of something else?
I'd say I just adopt utilitarianism. Like, I don't, in the way that I act, I obviously don't always act in a perfectly utilitarian way where, if I was a better utilitarian, I'd do something more productive, donate a larger share of my income to effective charities. But I think hopefully I do pretty well.
But your public policy positions would be, you try to square them. If someone proved to you one of your beliefs was inconsistent with maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain, you would change your mind because that's all you need to know for a policy or social opinion?
So I think not quite, because I'm somewhat morally uncertain. So I think utilitarianism's right, but I think it's possible that it's wrong. I might be mistaken about utilitarianism. And so if I might be mistaken about utilitarianism, then I should sort of take a weighted average of the various moral views on offer, where utilitarianism, because it's the thing that I think is most likely, I'll give it the most weight, but then there will be other things to which I would give weight. So if I could, you know, violate rights in very severe ways for like a very slight increase in aggregate utility, I would not do that because it wouldn't be worth the risk that I'm doing something very wrong just for the sake of a very small benefit.
Hmm. What does that actually mean for if utilitarianism was wrong? Is that a meaningful statement?
Well, so I'm a moral realist, so I think morality is objective. There are certain things that you truly ought to do and other things that you truly ought not to do. The reason I think this is that there are certain moral claims that seem extremely obvious. And just like it makes sense to believe in the external world because it seems very obvious that there's an external world, just like it makes sense to believe certain modal claims, so claims about what's possible and necessary, like it makes sense to think not only are there no contradictory states of affairs, there are no like married bachelors, there couldn't be even in principle because it seems really obvious that there couldn't be in principle. And so similarly, it seems to me that it's wrong to torture people, and the wrongness of torturing people doesn't depend on anyone's beliefs. So it's wrong, and it's wrong in a way that doesn't depend on people's beliefs. So it's not subjectively wrong, and it is wrong, so it's objectively wrong. And so that's a reason to think morality is objective. Now, you know, I do have some credence. You know, I might be mistaken about that. Morality might be subjective. If morality is subjective, it's not clear exactly what you should do. But I think, you know, if morality is objective, then things are genuinely important. And so you should sort of have the things that you take into account in terms of your moral deliberation should primarily be on the assumption that morality is objective.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know if this distinction matters, but I like moral realism as a philosophy for organizing society, for just basically a way, as sort of a guide for how we talk about issues and how we go about, you know, our behavior. I'm fine with that. I think we had this conversation when I saw you in person. When I say something is objective, when I think of saying something is objectively true, I just have a different sense that refers to something else. I think I agree the external world is real, and I'll accept the intuitive case for that. I just think, like, do we, should we or should we not have a word for, gravity, distinguish something like gravity from torture is wrong. These seem to me to be different things.
Well, I think when you say something's objective, what you mean is that it's true and its truth doesn't depend in any way on people's beliefs. And so when you say that the external world is real, that's objectively true, and that like it wouldn't stop being real if people stopped believing in it, because it genuinely is real. And so similarly, I think, you know, we could all be mistaken about moral claims. You know, even if you convinced everyone in society to support torturing babies, for example, like, it would still be wrong, because I think its wrongness doesn't depend on people's attitudes towards it. I agree, it's sort of like it is a different kind of claim, but there are lots of different things that are objectively true that are of different kinds. Like the claim, you know, there are infinite prime numbers. That's objectively true, but that's a very different sort of claim from the claim that, the external world exists, or that there are trees.
Yeah, mathematical truths do seem different from physical truths, and I have no problem with putting mathematical truths and physical truths in the same category, giving them the same term, which is things that are objectively true. And so can I just take moral claims and put them in the same bin? Yes, I see it now. I think you've convinced me to be a moral. Yeah. I think it's
if
very
people are interested in reading a very good and entertaining book on the subject, Michael Humer has a book called Ethical Intuitionism, where he makes this case for moral realism on the grounds that, you know, we normally believe things when they seem really obvious to us and we don't have a good reason not to believe in them. And that's true of moral claims. There are all sorts of moral claims that seem extremely obvious that we don't have a good reason to abandon. And so we should think there's objective morality.
Okay. Yeah. And I know, we know Brian Kaplan loves Michael Humer. I've read a little bit of his blog.
I feel like Michael Humer is sort of like Brian Kaplan if he was like much better at philosophy. And not an economist.
Yeah. But do they have substantial differences as far as because it seems like, I mean, I don't know. I've never read, besides his blog, I've never read Humer. You might have convinced me to check him out just because I tend to think it's hard to convince people of things in philosophy, but you just convinced me of something. So this sort of changes my view of philosophy. What's similarities and differences between him and Brian?
So I think they agree on most political stuff. The things that they disagree about are things where, I mean, not to be, you know, I like Kaplan a lot, but basically where I think it's just a byproduct of Humer, like thinking more clearly about a philosophical topic than Kaplan. So two examples of this are, first of all, Humer thinks that that we should care a lot about animals because, you know, you shouldn't cause others lots of suffering for the sake of small benefits.
I've seen Brian's take on animals and I've always found it to be not very good. So,
Yeah, actually, I think the way you know, you found me originally was that I posted on Twitter, like, so Kaplan had a chart of how much animals matter by their intelligence, where it was like up to the threshold right before humans, they don't matter at all. And then it like randomly shoots up and then it plateaus after the average threshold of humans so that more intelligent humans don't matter much more than less. And I was like, surely this is not the way that like the amount that creatures matter can work, you know, like
you have reached the end of the free recording for this episode of Clown Car. To listen to the rest of the episode, please consider becoming a paid subscriber.